It's Dieter and Jake on a short week Tuesday, which is now both our Tuesday and our Friday show, and everything is compressed into a glass case of emotion, and we're tweeting through it, Jake. We're just tweeting.
That's right. That's right.
My goodness. We still have to go over what happened in the game against the Bears, and before you know it, they're going to have a game against the Rams with only their season on the line. Not that it was ever really in doubt that the season's over, but at least they can lie to themselves for another week if they win. We can all lie to ourselves that this has any point. I'm sounding like Kyle at a presser right now, but
very existential of you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks. Philosopher King here. George Kittle said something interesting today. The Bears just didn't try to do anything on defense, which watching that game back, nailed it, buddy. That's a 10 out of 10 assessment from George Kittle. Thinking on that Bears game now with some time separated from it, what stands out to you most?
Yeah, I do. I did appreciate. So the way that came up is George is trying to defend Debo in that game.
We'll get to Debo. We'll get to
So that's how this comes up, right? Is he's asked about Debo having limited production, and he goes, well, Debo was supposed to have a really good game. But it's an awesome answer because he's like, but the Bears, we had all these cool plays that were designed to go to Debo and trick plays, but the Bears abandoned their entire defense. They have all these things, the way they use their defensive ends, and we were going to take advantage of that. And then the Bears just abandoned that and no longer did it what it was that they did because they fired their head coach, which was, as we saw, this defense, which has a lot of great components.
Yep.
They, instead of using those components, saying, all right, we're going to let Jalen Johnson press your receivers. We're going to let, Kyler Gordon, who's a pretty decent nickel, at least try. Yeah. And then, Tyreek Stevenson's not very good, but hey, if we put him on Debo, maybe we have a shot, right? Instead of doing any of that, they said, we're wide open. We're wide open. Just come at us. We're going to leave George Kittle open right there. We're going to play unbalanced. We are not going to get to the quarterback. And the one time we do, the quarterback realized that you had an unbalanced formation. And he said, I'm going to take a one-on-one shot to Isaac Arendo because he's very fast and your linebacker is not going to catch him. So what I saw is truly, and I don't mean this just to be hyperbolic, that was the worst defensive game plan I have seen from a 49ers opponent, bar none, all year long, without question in my mind. And it's not that the Bears don't have the personnel. They got like a decent little linebacker group. They've got Byard as a safety. Mm-hmm. I mentioned the corners. Their defensive line is not terrible. I really like Montez Sweat. They gave the business
to a couple of teams down the stretch here. Green Bay, and Minnesota. Dallas, who'd they play on Thanksgiving? Doesn't matter.
They
were playing decent football.
They were competitive because the defense was decent and at least made it hard on teams at times. They weren't elite by any stretch, but they were mostly sound and kept it in it. And then the offense in the second half would come alive, and Caleb Williams still doesn't really know what he's doing out there, but he's having fun, right? And none of this was fun for the Bears because they had a pathetic defensive game plan. And it was worse than their offense, which was, I think, it was 319. The 49ers at 319 yards, the Bears 4 in the first half.
Statistically, it might have been the most dominant half of football in the Super Bowl era. There's never been that level of disparity before in terms of yards. I don't think at any point watching it, we thought, this is some historic thing. It just felt sad. And somewhat positive. I mean, listen, flip side for the Niners, taking advantage of an opportunity feels positive for them. Like, hey, this looks good. Our concern, and we mentioned this on Sunday night, is this a one-off or is this the Niners figuring their shit out a little bit? Thursday night is not a great data point in general. You get no time to adjust. You have to stick with what you already do. In a way, that could be positive, and we'll get into a deeper breakdown later, but the Rams want to play a bunch of zone coverage. You play zone against the Niners, Brock Purdy's going to tear you up, baby. That's just how it goes. He's the best quarterback.
Yep.
Unquestionably. And he might be the worst against man-to-man. that is not strictly a Brock Purdy problem. That has a lot to do with his receivers. That has a lot to do with the scheme. And it does have something to do with Brock. It's not to exonerate him from responsibility here. But ultimately, the Bears, knowing, not knowing, who's to say, given their chaos in the building, the Bears had the information readily available at some point. If I can get it, they can get it. To note, hey, maybe we should just play man-to-man. They had the personnel, I would argue, to play man-to-man.
They absolutely did.
And they decided we're going to play zone on more than 80% of our snaps. Great job, everybody. Great job.
It was really pathetic to watch. And it's something where there are times where a firing can energize a team, mm-hmm. especially a team that the players wanted Eberflus gone.
Oh, yeah. They ran him out.
They ran him out of the building. And then you have the most pathetic performance you have probably all year. And then you're down 25 in the fourth quarter, you know, celebrating an arm punt for a full minute in the end zone. And again, I know that can be a nitpicky thing, but that was pretty embarrassing. That told you all you need to know about what the Bears are about for the rest of the year. They're done. They're just done.
They were done before they showed up. They just confirmed the time of death was a couple of weeks back. Just nope, super dead. Just wanted to make sure. We poked it a couple times, still dead. This is ostensibly a 49ers and other things show, so let's swing it to the 49ers. They had a game that made them feel young again. They were back. They got their groove back. They were full Stella for one game, and I'm not discounting the possibility that it shows up again on Thursday night against a Rams defense that is almost the opposite of the Bears, because they're just trying anything. They're getting weird with it.
They're
not very good at it, but they're trying stuff out.
I asked Brock about him because they run a lot of stuff. He's like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot going on there.
I've never seen so much goddamn cover six in a game in my life.
It felt like they played cover six for the first half entirely.
Pretty much.
I know they are objectively like a decent, you know, rate cover six team, like one of the higher rates in the league, which is 14%. And that's basically tied for second. But it felt like they ran cover six, you know, at least a third of the time in that game. It was quarter half from their safeties. Very, very clearly a lot of the time. And I just think that's interesting. They also did one play that you sent me where they had a corner who I think his responsibility was a tight end. Once he saw the tight end stayed into block, he took on the responsibility.
He ran entirely across the field to spy Josh Allen.
Yes. Yes.
Not, and then not like linebacker moving over from weak to strong side. He ran from the opposite corner to the other corner. He ran 50 yards across.
He was running ghost motion. He was running ghost motion, and he just hauled. And literally once he got to, I think it was Roseboom, who's one of their very, 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 very mediocre linebackers.
That's right.
Roseboom just took off and went downhill. Like he took over the spy, and then their corner dropped. And listen, they're not a good defense by any stretch. I mean, every single stat you look at, And watching them, it's not like they're dominant, but their defensive front's cool versus a maniac. Kobe Turner's really good. Fisk has moments. Byron Young's pretty decent. They've got a good front. You know, there's a lot of question marks elsewhere, but they're doing cool stuff. It's not necessarily working, but it's kind of fun.
Or is it deliberately chaotic? I mean, what's the difference? Well, it does feel as if cool has purpose outside of just eyewash, right? Like that baseball term of just doing stuff to make people look at you. This feels like a lot of dudes playing defense with the entire point of saying, look over here, look over here, look over here, which I'm not sure is going to pan out if you're playing. I mean, Josh Allen missed about three or four throws in this game that could have been huge chunk plays. He still had the greatest fantasy football performance of all time.
He missed a bunch of throws in the first half. Like a bunch.
And there were like three or four 40-yard gains over the middle, if not house calls, based on the way the safeties were aligned. And you're watching it and you're like, oh, I don't think he had a very good game. I'm not kidding. the single greatest fantasy football game of all time for a quarterback. He had 55 points. So it's there. It's there if you want it, I guess. I will say two things. One, they are going to get pressure. Now, the Bills did not give up a sack. They don't give up sacks. There were no sacks in this game. There were barely any
penalties. It was insane to watch. It was one of them. I kept having to pause and check.
Did you watch the Brady Burkhart feed, or did you watch the All-22?
I watched the All-22. Somebody said Brady was good at the end of the game explaining something.
No. That's okay.
Go for it.
Let it rip. Who's the media guy at The Athletic? What's his name?
Is that what you read? They did something about like, this is why you paid Tom Brady $37 million.
I didn't even see that.
I'm like, to state an obvious thing. To be able to do basic math.
I heard him do... The problem with Tom is his voice is scratchy and it's high-pitched. And so that alone makes it hard to listen to him. And then you get into the fact that he's like not really breaking anything down other than mentioning a squirrel route, which he was very excited about. It's just hard to listen to.
KB. And it's a high scoring game. That means you're going to have to put up points if you want to win, KB. It's not good. It's not good. And I look forward to watching that maybe after this show, because I have watched the All-22, and it was just a really fun game. The Rams are good for one just insane put it on every channel game a year. They certainly circles
Sorry.
Are the squirrel.
I just remembered.
What do you got?
There was the start of the game. People are talking about Brady had a decent game. At the start of the game, one of the few clips I did watch before the All-22 came out, Brady points to something. He points to a receiver. I want to say it's Whittington. Okay. I want to say it's Whittington. And he goes, so this guy, and he circles him, and he stops talking. And he goes, sorry. And then he stops talking. And I've never heard a commentator. I've genuinely never heard anyone do that.
So I adhere to, at least in whatever I do for a living, I try to adhere to the principle of not punching down. Don't always follow through on that. But the idea is you don't punch down. You can, someone wants to punch up, you can give them a little something back. But like, I'm not picking, I'm not writing critical stuff about teenagers or people who are down. Like, we're not punching down. And we try to adhere to that here because that's just like a basic, decent thing, I think. I'm starting to almost feel like we're punching down on Thomas Brady, greatest football player of all time, and and $37 million. Man, he's so bad at this. It's like he's never watched football. It's like he won a contest every week.
It's actually insane because I grew up in New Jersey and I just watched him decimate the Jets when I was still a real fan of the Jets, and I learned why I should not be.
You need to know why Jake is the way that he is.
Right.
There you go.
And so I've seen this guy, Demal. I know he knows about every coverage and what he's looking for pre-snap, and I know he's limited on what he can say, but he could do a better job. The NFL is not really going to take away his ownership status if he's doing a better job with some pre-snap breakdown.
Oh no, they won't make me do broadcast television anymore.
It's just like
he'll be fine.
He's on par with anyone's dad at this point. He's like that's not good, KB. You know, they scored a touchdown. He got a free release. That's like high level for him at this point.
Yeah, free release is incredible. He's just a more beautiful Witten at this point. I'm done talking about it.
Yeah, let's move on.
Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit on Amazon. So everybody get your crack streams ready and prepare to watch this game. Get your HDMI cords.
I was listening to a separate podcast. Pablo Torre finds out. Listen to ours, but if you're going to listen to another sports podcast. And he mentioned the story of how Al Michaels was once traded for some Disney IP.
That's right. He was traded for Steamboat Willie.
No, pre-Steamboat Willie. There was someone before Steamboat Willie.
Oh.
And I want to say it was a squirrel or a rabbit, and I have already forgotten.
Squirrel route?
Squirrel route. He was traded for Tom Brady's description of a squirrel route. Moving on from the
media. It's fitting that Al Michaels was traded for an animal because he doesn't eat vegetables. He only eats protein.
I gotta say,
carbs.
I gotta say, there's a lot of cool sports streaks out there. Al Michaels being what in his 70s, having never consumed a vegetable.
Nope.
Won't
do it.
It's one of those things where, you know, when you hear about someone's like evil grandmother who's like the worst person of all time.
Yeah, she lived on whiskey and back fat.
Yeah. Chain smokes every day, is genuinely an awful person. It's like she lived to be 107. And you're like, so what am I doing this for? Why am I doing yoga? And Al Michaels is not quite at that level, but the fact that he's never eaten a vegetable is incredible.
I would just like to note that rich people don't play by the same rules of humanity.
Fair.
They just don't tell us what the thing that you can do with money is. Magic Johnson's had HIV for my entire life. He's fine.
Yeah, it's all good.
He's had HIV so long they almost cured HIV. Like, you could just take a pill and it's non-detectable now. He lived long enough to that day. He won. He beat the game. He made billions of dollars during that period of time. When he got it in 1990, 91, it was a death sentence. And he stayed alive, shout out South Park, because he fed money into it. So, hey.
Incredible.
I don't know what they're doing. Just get that money. That's where the answers come.
Speaking of getting that money.
They're restructuring some contracts, Jake.
They are restructuring some contracts, folks.
I did not see this one coming. Explain what happened today.
So, shout out Jason Fitzgerald of Over the Cap. Never use Spotrac. Anyone who doesn't know ball, use Over the Cap, genuinely.
You guys are Timothy Chalamet if you're using Spotrac.
Yes, absolutely. So use Over the Cap, first of all. They have accurate contract information and like the detailed stuff you need to know. Jason of Over the Cap reported today that the 49ers restructured Javon Hargrave's deal.
Restructured
contracts are becoming more and more popular because you can just take, you know, base salary and create cap space. But you get to a point where when someone is a likely cut, you can restructure it in a way where you say, all right, we're going to guarantee you a little bit like more upfront. But we're actually going to be able to get out of this deal easier. I'm not going to pretend I know exactly the mechanics of all of it, but he breaks it down. And the point is the 49ers restructured Hargrave's deal so that they could set up a post June 1st cut. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the case with Debo, which wouldn't have been the case with his restructure, which honestly I saw it, but didn't fully have a grasp of it because the numbers are getting weirder and weirder every year. And they're a little more obtuse, but basically the breakdown is Hargrave, Debo can be cut post June 1st.
So is the Debo restructuring, which we have, we'll fold mea culpa here, at least my end, I've been operating as if it really ties them to him for next year. Is this suggesting by someone who knows this stuff way better than we do that restructuring was implicitly to then post June 1 him? That's why they did it? Because it doesn't seem as if that helped.
Yeah, no, it pushed more money down the line, but I think, one, it gives you more money up front, which you carry over, which basically when you restructure, like, you're getting money now and then you carry it over. So it's just free money, you know, and it's not really because you got to pay down the line. But I think the way they have it set it up, they can get out of that Debo deal. They can post June both of those guys. They can post June 1 both of them, which is interesting.
Debo post June 1 is like, what do they save? $10 million? They still
they post June. If they post June 1 Debo, I think it's, let's see, we got the numbers here. It's $5 million they save. It's a dead cap. They save $5 million if they post June 1, which is why I've been like, I don't know if they're actually going to do it. With Hargrave, it says they, you know, only save $2.9 million. But they've basically gotten rid of most of that money. So in like 2026, all that stuff is clear. So they basically
eating out the void years.
Yeah. Yes. They're. I'm just gonna move on.
So that's interesting. I mean, I don't think it changes anything fundamentally, right? It's just a clear indication of, hey, you're not coming back. We weren't going to bring you back. Let's move some money around. You get a little something now. We get a little something on the books.
I'll just, I'll just read like the exact phrasing from him because
that'd be great.
He's got it. So they reduce his base salary from $20 million basically to $2 million. So it dropped his salary cap number from 20.
This is for 2024? 25.
Yeah.
Presumably I want to say 25.
I want to say this is 2025.
Yeah. Because he's already been paid. In
right. So it dropped his salary cap number from 28 million to 10 million. And the original cost to cut him would have been either 25 million on the cap or 28 million using the post June 1st cut. Now. He'll count for just $10 million on the cap, and then it would drop lower in 2025, and they can defer the rest of it to 2026. So, it's all a bit of a squirrel route.
Yes,
this stuff.
Yes, no guaranteed salary for next year. Now that's what we have. Yeah. So you cut him. There's still some bonus money that needs to. He has a prorated signing bonus and an option that are going to have to be paid against the cap. That's about $6.1 million each year until 2028,
right?
Plus $1.2 million on the options that have to be paid against the cap. But he gets a little something now to restructure it. In effect, the Niners can clear the books a little bit easier comparatively. So,
yep.
Hey, this is I'm glad that they're dealing with this shit now. Right. Like they need to start getting stuff arranged today. It doesn't matter what happens on the field. The evidence for the first 13 weeks of the season was unimpeachable that this team needs to have a fundamentally radical offseason. They're not rebuilding. They're not doing anything, but they have to get younger, faster, and perhaps better would be nice in a lot of different areas. And there's only so many ways you can do that in the course of one off season: trades, draft, and then, of course, cutting some of the dead weight from the roster.
Yep.
Even if it isn't that fun. They did it with Armstead. And the thing with Armstead that kind of kills me is I was never the biggest Eric Armstead fan, but he unquestionably had a valuable role on the 49ers defense.
As we've seen.
And I think we knew that even when he was playing. It just never felt like he was... he never felt like personally a great run stopper. So it was hard to feel as if he was the load bearing wall for the entire house that is the run defense. So, okay. They had to move on from him because the money was the money and it was pretty evident. Like someone had to go. They had to do that and they didn't go the full way. So now they have to do 2 years worth of cleaning up, building up basic off-season maneuverability, right? Making sure that the arrow points up. They have to do 2 years of that in the course of one off-season. And that's not to say it's impossible. It's just to say that it's going to be hard as fuck. So you better have your ducks in a row with Hargrave and Debo or whomever is going to get cut because you get two post-June one cuts. And
And I will say they've been pretty good at squeezing the juice out of the salary cap and maneuvering it in increasingly nifty ways. Yeah. They're so good at it that the NFL did not give them a draft pick along with the Buffalo Bills last offseason because the NFL did some calculation the wrong way or the way that the Bills and Niners weren't expecting. And both of those teams were like, hey, this is what we were expecting. They're like, oh, yeah, well, we had a different calculation. So, but they've been very good at working it out and finding money and taking a guy who's just squeezing them and saying, hey, we might want to cut you. You can either like take a little bit here and then we'll still probably cut you. Just working it in a bunch of different ways. And I know that's like painting with a broad brush, but they have set themselves up for the most part to be able to navigate some of these deals. Not the case with like really Trent Williams or Nick Bosa. But with most of the deals, they gave themselves some outs and some ways to operate and get finicky with it. Now, the question is, do they keep, if I was them, you get rid of Hargrave, you probably Don't bring Charvarius Ward back, although he's going to make count for like $13 million on your dead cap hit anyway next year, just with a void year. And then Debo, I think it could go either way for Debo. I think the way it's trending now is you probably do want to move on from him. Mm-hmm. Like I know they defended him today in the locker room as they do with Shanahan and Kittle. I just will say, if you're a guy who's a captain, right, and you're going to do the thing where you call out a kicker and then you don't talk to the media and whatever, and you're going to be active on social media, that's your prerogative. I bet, you know, I'm not going to speak for any of those guys on how they see Debo.
We too are on a podcast.
Correct. But when you get to the point where you just came off the most convincing win of the season, you win by 25, mm-hmm. and you're out there
Look at me,
I'm actually playing really well. Get off me. It's not the best look. It's not the best look. And he at least admitted that he's frustrated for the first time after denying that. So okay. They might hold Debo in high esteem and really believe that it's just worth bringing him back for another year. We'll say it's been a rough year. Yeah, it's been a distraction a little bit.
I've said this once, I'll repeat it again. Debo Samuel also deserves the opportunity to prove that this is just a singular down year. I think that at 28 years old, we might all see what's happening out there and say washed, but that's not a permanent condition, right? It might be, but he at least deserves the opportunity, should the Niners want to give it to him, to go out there, much like Kyle and Brock to a degree, who have had down years. Both of them, I think, have built up enough cachet. Kyle, certainly, Brock, to the point where he's still going to get his contract. Both of them get the opportunity to go out this in 2025 and say, hey, it was a down year. Check this shit out.
Yeah.
Debo.
And I do think
that opportunity too.
It's almost gone beyond the pale where it's like so obvious that Debo's not himself or what he was. That
it's
like,
ugly to watch.
It's really also ugly to watch. Yeah, but he's all, yeah, there's also have been a lot of things that have gone wrong and how they get him involved and a lot of missed blocks and a lot of missed opportunities. But again, he just was a guy that would make the most of every half opportunity, and that's not the case. And so you have to hold him to a higher standard because that's who he is as a player. He's not AJ Brown. He's not Terry McLaurin or DK. He's not all those guys who got paid, same agent, same class. Who all got basically the same deal he did, right? Because those guys are true receivers. Well, like they can.
Yeah. Debo was coming off of an offensive player of the year campaign.
He was coming off the best campaign of all those guys.
Yeah.
But those guys are true receivers. They can actually play the position and run most of the routes in the route tree and offer a lot and can be number one guys in their offense. Debo, as a receiver, cannot. No. He has a unique skill set. And when he can't offer that other half of it, he's a below average true receiver. Now, when you get the ball in his hands and there's zone coverage and a lot of that scheme and what defense is put against him, which also reflects that he's limited and is, as Craig Cosell likes to say, a schemed player.
Right.
When you don't get to run that sort of same offense against zone coverage and you're not able to have like a dink and dunk and get him going, then you see the limitations of him as a player. And when he's not at, you know, the peak of his powers and able to make a bunch of guys miss on half plays.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
100%. I'll throw this again to piggyback off your point here. The idea that he's not getting the ball. Well, part of that is his fault. He isn't just getting open and Brock's not looking his way. If he is getting open, can you blame Brock for not looking his way? He so rarely gets open. Second, he had 5 carries in the last game. 5. 13 yards total. And that included an 8-yard run where for a half second you thought, oh, damn, that was pretty good. He had a nice little jump cut. So they can't even run the ball with him anymore. And then he can't separate. Oh, the idea, I need to go against zone. Why are teams playing press man-to-man if they have a coach worth their salt? The Bears didn't. Because they fired all their good coaches. Why? Every team is playing man-to-man. Why? Because of you. It's not because of Juwan Jennings or Pearsall or Ayuk or Kittle or certainly Christian McCaffrey whenever he was in. They certainly weren't making a game plan around Jordan Mason. The game plan was Deebo Samuel cannot beat man-to-man coverage. Here's three Kansas City and a Baltimore tape to show it. Why don't we do that? Because if he's not involved in the game, the Niners look different.
And here's the reality. He's almost exactly as involved as he was last year. Last year, Deebo Samuel, 89 targets, 60 receptions. This year, with four games to play, 64 targets, 40 receptions.
Yeah.
A little fewer targets in the pass game. He was also hurt at the start.
Missed Kansas City.
Right. So rushing, 37 attempts last year. This year, 32 attempts. He was averaging 6.1 yards per attempt last year, averaging 2.9 yards per carry this year.
I mean, just think back to 2023, which was not even close to Deebo's best year. But he went for six catches and 129 yards against the Giants. Went for four catches, 116 yards against the Eagles in a total FU game. Next week comes out, seven catches, 149 yards, touchdown. Carrying the ball in every single game of the year, averaging 6.1 yards per clip on the run. They're getting the ball to him in every which way. His numbers went down in the playoffs because the caliber of competition went up. He also had a shoulder injury, right? So he plays against Green Bay, two catches, 24 yards, shoulder injury, comes back, has a quiet first half against Detroit, then goes completely off in the second half, sacrifices it all. And then Kansas City's like, well, we're not, you know, he's not going to beat us. And we're going to dare him to beat us. And if he can't beat us against man-to-man, this offense has to go to stuff that they're just not particularly good at. And that's on Kyle and that's on Brock in conjunction. The team is built to get you into zone looks. It's why Christian McCaffrey is on the team. This year, he had, I would argue, one great game. Minnesota, eight catches, 110 yards. You might have heard tell of it. He's had some numbers, like Tampa, 62 yards on five catches. The Seattle Thursday night game, that was just one catch. That was a 76-yarder. That was a perfectly schemed play where he got to run in a straight line as fast as he can. Because he, like a locomotive, he can still get some momentum going behind him here. When has Deebo Samuel taken over a game this year? That used to be par for the course for him. And I'm not talking about 21, 22. I'm talking last year. You could second half NFC championship game, Deebo Samuel takes over. Get me the he's going after the first catch and saying, feed me, feed me. So,
yeah. I honestly think Deebo does look different. I also think we have overblown a little bit how he's looked, but he objectively looks much worse to me in terms of breaking tackles and in terms of his movement horizontally and his agility. Like, to me, he does look worse in that situation, and he's breaking fewer tackles. I do think when you talk about Woodpit, you said it's situational. I do think that's a lot of it, because you lose Ayuk, you lose a guy who's able to attack man coverage. Ricky Pearsall's not trusted yet. He's not trusted at all. They're rarely looking for him in this offense at this point. Juwan Jennings is not a guy that takes the top off of the defense. He's playing X, but he's not able to run the routes in the same way that Ayuk is, even close to. Right. And so then it's Ayuk, or it's Jennings and Deebo. And when you don't have that X, who's really like a focal point and the defense has to focus on in the same way.
You want, like, your X to be a game breaker, you know?
It makes it right.
Then you trade off. Okay, we'll have more of the possession receiver here at the Z, so that he can do the digs and unders, but you have the guy who forces the safety to go with him, that gets that attention on the deep routes. And if you don't want to give that safety attention, he's going to burn you, because he'll win one-on-one because he's longer, faster, and stronger.
Right. There's
no question that the pneumonia has had an effect, Ian. Like, I'm with you. Like, he has not looked the same since the pneumonia, but he didn't look good before it either. It just is what it is. And
it's the reality is, like, again, Debo's a guy who runs a limited route tree, like drags, crossers. Like, there's sometimes he can run other routes, but for the most part, he's just not a guy. He definitely can't attack man coverage. That's a fact that we know about it.
I mean, think about his 20-yard catch against the Bears. It was if you watch it, just a terrible route. He's coming up and then he loops around and then he kind of has to box out, and it's like, Brock was almost giving him one out of pity because it's he might be here, he might not, but it's not going to be an interception.
And you know what the thing is? I think some of this scrutiny, not from us, is a little delayed because we've known what Debo is as a player, right? We've known he's limited. We saw it in the Super Bowl. We saw what that was. And a lot of people who don't, I think, watch the All-22 in the same way go, Debo's just a really good player. Not thinking about critically like what he actually is as a player. And so
what makes him a good player? I don't know. He just is. People watch the this is not a toot our own horns thing. This is a fundamental understanding of why this works. And we're constantly looking for the why. Why is that work? Why did that fail? They're just going off of the empirical evidence of what happened. And football can be fickle. Football can be a sport like any sport. I mean, the fucking ball in football isn't even round. You know, like it can bounce a million different ways. And there's so many different elements into one play that it's very difficult to get to a fundamental understanding of why something did or didn't work. That's what we're looking for. I think most people just watch it and say it did, therefore it isn't. Flip side of the argument, Ricky Pearsall's not catching passes. He must suck. That's really not the case. It isn't. Oh, Brock Purdy had, 94 yards in the snow. He must not be very good. Not really. Why did he have 94 yards? Again, this isn't to say that Ricky Pearsall is going to be the next Marvin Harrison, and it's not to say that Debo Samuel is Kadarius Toney. And it's certainly not to say that Brock doesn't have limitations in his game. It's just merely there's a lot more nuance and intricacies to this stuff, and having an understanding of what it is the Niners want to do and what it is they try to do, and then watching it try to be executed, having sort of that context on a play-by-play basis, whether it's overt context that we can point to, hey, they ran this play in week 5, or it's this sort of nebulous concept because we've been so conditioned in watching it, it's not the same. It's not the same with Debo. He looks slower, he looks more tentative, and he looks frustrated, and that's manifesting
and he obviously is frustrated. He's taking it out online and he's making it clear. And the thing is, he's getting roughly the same amount of touches, but one, defense has become better at accounting for it, especially now that there's no McCaffrey and they only had McCaffrey for a few games. Ayuk is out, and Ayuk wasn't really himself earlier in the year, so you had less ways to attack defenses. And when Debo goes in the backfield, they're assuming he's going to either run it or get it on a little screen.
That's great. They love that. It's ironically, that's the one time that you can play zone because he's not a threat out of the backfield because he doesn't have the burst and you're not afraid of him making one guy miss and going.
Yeah. And they also are worse, I think, on the edge because he's not hitting the edge with the same speed and elusiveness as before. And also in general, I think they have missed a lot of blocks. Like Juwan Jennings, I think because a lot has been asked of him, he's a worse blocker than he has been in past years.
Unless he's tight aligned, he doesn't block anymore.
I've also seen George Kittle miss more blocks than he has in past years. And I'm not saying these guys are great blockers. I'm just saying a lot is being asked of them in a lot of areas. There's a lot of wear and tear. And I have seen these guys miss more blocks in the past. And I've seen Kittle acknowledge one of the plays. He missed one. I think he said Jennings missed one on one of the plays that was set up for Debo. So there is other stuff going on. And we can also admit that we've known what Debo is as a player for a long time. He's a limited player, not a true receiver. And that's why he got paid that unique contract and labeled himself the wide back. Mm-hmm. And when defenses are accounting better because you have less weapons, you're not blocking as well, and you're not the same player you once were, it's a perfect cocktail for a pretty frustrating season.
And let's just take it one step further here. This is one of the reasons why the NFL is great. It used to be that teams would just run cover 2, cover 3, cover 4. Sometimes they do cover 2 press. They were vanilla. They were basic. You had these unathletic linebackers who couldn't do squat in coverage. They were prehistoric. And Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and even Zach Flippin' Taylor are out here just carving it up, carving it up. And what are we going to see on Thursday? We're going to see the exact opposite of that. We're going to see a defense that, like you see in Seattle, like you saw with Baltimore last year, like you see with Minnesota, you're seeing defenses get deeply exotic. We have had a counterbalance to the offensive revolution that made Kyle Shanahan a genius and everything. You're seeing defensive coaches say, fuck it. If I'm going to lose, I'm going out firing. We're gonna start shooting because we have athleticism on this side of the ball too, and we're going to start to use it like the Kyle Shanahan uses a Deebo Samuel. Is he a running back? Is he a wide receiver? Well, he's not great at either, but he's good at both, so we're going to use him like that. Van Ginkle for Minnesota. Is he a linebacker? Is he a defensive end? He's not great at either. We're going to use him at both.
Van Ginkle in my secret horrible league where there's a defensive player for the defensive line linebacker and DB. I picked him up off waivers early on. Been the number one defensive lineman in the league.
There is evidence on this channel that he was my favorite guy to go get in free agency.
You love him.
And when they got Leonard Floyd instead of him, didn't care for
it. I will say Leonard Floyd's been playing well.
He's looked good as of late, for sure. I think you and I would look good against the Bears offensive line. Hey, if the Rams offensive line might be there as well. The thing is, it's not Flores. Sorry, Ian Sharp says Flores had the answers. It's not that he had the answers. It's a lot like Kyle. There's an ideological attack there. We are going to come at you with chaos. So they're playing zone behind chaos up front. They've abandoned the linebacker position. They'll play dime. They'll play nickel, but they're going to play zones. Here's where I call them the conjoined triangles of success behind, where they're covering the flat, the hook, and the deep. And they're mixing up quarters and palms, quarters coverage, cover two. And basically the cornerback is either making the triangle point down or point up. And because there's so much pressure on the quarterback, because there's just dudes running at him,
right?
One of them's going to be open. He has to guess if that corner, both of which are veterans who have been in this league forever, who know how to disguise their shit. He has to guess if that corner's going up or if he's coming down. And if you guess wrong, you get intercepted.
They're fundamentally like unpredictable, and they'll show you the same look and run a different coverage. Like they are as, how do I want to say this? Equal in terms of coverage. Like the only team that runs cover two 24% of the time, cover three 24% of the time, cover four 22% of the time, where they're giving you a lot of the same looks and you don't know what's coming behind it. And it doesn't really matter. They just mix it up. It's like, it's like if you're playing, poker or something, and there's like an ideal strategy where it's like, sometimes it's better to fold like a good hand
you're hitting on 17 in blackjack.
You're just exactly unpredictable. And the Niners didn't have the answers, I think, was just the reality of it. And they didn't have a lot of the answers for a lot of teams this season. The Bears forgot to test them in that way.
Because, Hutch, you have to fight versatility with versatility. You got to go athlete on athlete. And Kyle has built a scheme which is getting better, it should be noted. Signing Ayuk, you have more versatility with man-to-man. In drafting Pearsall, you have more versatility in man-to-man. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey, the perfect vessel for versatility. Deebo is a zone receiver, but he can force you to play some man-to-man when he was in the backfield before teams stopped taking him seriously back there. Like, he is trying to push it a little bit, but you're coming from a strictly, we only go against zone thing because you could get away with that. There were no laws. No one was putting any pressure on you counter-wise. You were Shaq, and the rules were stacked in your favor. And now there's the three-point shot on the other side, and suddenly you're not as dominant anymore.
Yeah, and I think the reality is the Ayuk thing hurt him a lot in the first half of the year. Him not being right when a lot of teams were just throwing that Chiefs playbook and stuff at him, and him with those drops. And they were also so close to winning a lot of those stupid games, right. But the defense isn't quite at the same level. No Dre Greenlaw really hurt him early.
Yeah.
Like Devondre Campbell's been better, but that sort of stuff hurt him early. And then now everything's out of their hands. They're coming around a little bit better, but there's no McCaffrey. There's no Ayuk and Pearsall. You don't trust him. So you're not doing the same things, but you're not able. I think when you go against man coverage, it's mostly dudes, and scheme is definitely a part of it.
Yeah,
but you need a lot of pick routes to work in tight areas in red zone if you don't have the dudes, mm-hmm. and they just didn't have that stuff working. And part of that scheme, but part of that's just dudes, and they lost the dudes.
Ben Johnson has figured it out. You know why Ben Johnson's figured it out? Because he has the best goddamn offensive line, and he has two running backs who should be Pro Bowlers, and he has Tim Patrick, who's been fantastic. He has a great tight end, three great wide receivers, one of which is even better. You can put Amon-Ra St. Brown in the backfield. He's not carrying it, but you can do some swing routes and angle routes to him. He is as close to figuring out as possible, and you can see when he does his cool shit, it's because the defense is now showing him man-to-man looks, or, hey, okay, now they've adjusted to the man-to-man. Here's something new to have to chew on when you're going to go zone. But when you have Goff protected on every snap, yep. you can boogie. How that's going to work in the future, if I'm Ben Johnson, I don't necessarily want to find out the hard way.
The one other thing that I meant to mention in that point, the one area of major critique yep. for Kyle Shanahan, yep. and which needs to be very, very much looked at and potentially overhauled in the offseason, is the way they call their protections
yeah.
and run them. Because when teams line up and overload a blitz to one side, 75% of the time, let's just say conservatively, teams are getting home with that. And yes. it's not an advantage. It is teams saying, we're going to flash six or seven. We know you're going to call the protection the wrong way. We're going to run this blitz either way.
They're not silently canning. So you'll see this a bunch where they're, okay, we're going to bring an overload blitz. Can. Okay, flip the blitz. Like it's like, hey, they're going to come from this side. Let's stop them there. And then the defense is like, do it the other way. And the Niners can't can again because it's already 3 seconds left with the play clock. This is an issue that a lot of these teams, the Rams have this problem.
Yep.
The Packers have this problem. All this motion, it because they don't get the play, and it's a 20-word long play call. So they're getting up to the line at like 12, 13 seconds, and then three dudes have to move. If you're on a silent count, you're screwed, right? And, yep. and you're not even getting to can the protection. So they'd absolutely need to do that, but that would require Kyle to let somebody else have some autonomy in his offense.
Yeah, and it's a situation, and I mentioned this. Oh, I'm going to give my old man shouting in a cloud take in a little bit in my column today. But it's the thing that they didn't figure out is, it'll be 5-on-4, sometimes 5-on-3. And just the way the protection is set up, you're getting a guy in Brock Purdy's face. And that happened once against the Bears.
It did.
But at the very least, Purdy knew where the blitzer was coming from, and he knew he was not coming to his blind side, which was happening a lot early in the year. And they were just asking him to like fade in the pocket and move his feet and throw at insane angles. And he was doing a lot of that.
Yeah.
This one, at least he saw the guy. It was Byard coming.
It's the Bears. They're not doing anything interesting or clever. They're not adjusting, you know, like there's no counter. They're just spamming the X button on, you know, Ask Madden. It's whatever you say, man. Just let's get through this one and get to the next one.
Yeah. But I think the point you made about the timing is something we've talked about.
Yeah.
It's that it's hard.
The same shit.
Right. You know? I know. But no, it is something where the offensive line, like even if you want to let Brock have the time to adjust it, or I mean, give him the autonomy to adjust it, he often does not have the time just the way the plays are. We'll see if they address that in the offseason. I think it'll be interesting. I kind of want to ask Kyle about that if they get officially eliminated, if that's something he would talk about midseason. Probably not, and I'll probably get the snark, but it's worth a shot.
Yeah, he'll go in on it. Let's answer some questions. If Garendo can't go on Thursday, do we think that's a major issue? Didn't see enough of Taylor Jr. to know him and Vaughn can carry the load. It's absolutely a major issue for every reason we've talked about all season. Patrick Taylor, Keyshawn Vaughn, nice enough running backs. They can't do they don't have the versatility of a Garendo to catch it out of the backfield. That's a real problem. It's a real problem. And they're lesser running backs.
I'm with you. I actually liked what Patrick Taylor's done when I've seen him run the ball, but I'm not expecting much. Like in terms of the pass game. That said, they probably feel decent about his ability to pick up a blitz and
pick
and
up
handle some protections.
That matters. But when you don't have the versatility of a Debo, you don't have any gadget ability with the Jennings, you need somebody who can just win. You need some dudes. Say what you will. Garoppolo doesn't know what he's doing yet, but he's a dude. Like, you can't match him up one-on-one. So
also, I'm just going to make an abrupt change to
do it.
So the game was Sunday, but we're 2 days removed from the 49ers. We talked about how bad the Bears' defensive game plan was and that they bludgeoned them, right? You give the Niners credit for actually playing a good game for once.
Yep.
The amount, I feel like I need to stand up and.
Yeah, you want to hold on to the table here, Andy Rooney?
There's a bat behind me that I feel like I was swinging. The amount I have heard about this pregame speech is insane, where they had Purdy and Diamador Lenore talk about how we got to play like our lives are on the line. We got to be desperate. We got to play with desperation. Okay, great. This is the Chicago Bears.
Right.
This is not a good team. You should be demolishing them. Your problem all season is that you're inconsistent. You don't execute in key moments. Teams have out-schemed you, and because you're lacking the dudes, you haven't adapted all that well, and you don't have some of the answers on your roster because you've got some flawed roster construction. Mm-hmm. Like, to take this and be like a victory lap of, oh, they finally, they took this speech, and this is going to be the thing that fixes it for them, as if this is not just like a one-off against the worst defensive game plan they've seen all year. And as if they've proven anything to anyone, while they're two games back in the division, they have a negative 60-point differential against teams with a winning record. They have not beaten a team at the time of a game with a winning record all season long. They've proven nothing to anyone. And we're just going, oh, the speech, man. Diamador Lenore giving a speech. I don't want to hear about it anymore. I don't want to hear about it anymore. And this listen,
Jake, but good on Kyle for letting this happen. You know why this is happening. People don't know football, and they're talking about football.
The amount of questions I was trying to desperately just ask something about cover six at the Rams run, and the amount of questions I heard today. And I'm not targeting anyone. I'm genuinely just saying it is maddening. This team is proven nothing. Is not a good football team, and until they beat a team with a winning record, or in within one game of the division, which again they're losing all the tiebreakers as it currently stands. Don't talk to me about some rallying cry. If you needed a rallying cry to beat the Chicago Bears, who are a joke of both a franchise and currently a team, I get out of my face.
Listen, we can't all be the Lisan Ball Gaib, you know? Like, some people have to deal with, like, football as an abstract concept that could never truly be known. Some people work in television, you know? Like, what do you want me to do? I'm just going to answer this now. Darwin Nunez. Let's talk Liverpool. I didn't watch the Liverpool game today. I am a fan of the concept of Darwin Nunez. At some point, that will come to pass. Jake wouldn't know because his stadium flooded, so they couldn't play on Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah, it was great.
It was great.
I'm done with my rant. Yeah,
no, you're 100% spot on. This is this classic, we don't know ball, media narrative. It's a story that a bunch of old folks who don't want to actually learn anything about the game that is, you know, on their television all week, like that is content for them. That is 60 minutes bullshit.
I just think we as a media group can do better than talking about the speech.
They can't. Only we can do better. We have to look out for ourselves and the audience.
And I know, like, it was a good win. I give them credit for a good win and doing what they were supposed to do all year long, a thing that they have not done. I give them credit for Kyle for mixing it up and letting guys talk in front of the team. Sure, it helped. Absolutely sure it helped. But if I hear one more question about it, I'm going to lose my mind.
Yeah. Well, you've just never been in a brotherhood, Jake.
By the way, this is not the first time I've gotten this. I got Kylo Ren the last time I had my hair long.
That's good soup.
So I'm sorry for screaming club. Into sorry for screaming into the void, folks, but I had to get that off my chest.
Well, otherwise it would have been me. Okay, let's do two here. ABC 123 is killing it tonight. Doubt they want to spend any money on Hufanga this offseason. Is Jair the starting safety next season? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no. I think that they're going to find a way to keep Hufanga around on a reasonable deal because of the injury stuff. I think that
they can maneuver that. I agree.
I'm not sure that's the best idea, but
I think they keep Hufanga for 1 year, $3 million, something like that.
Yeah.
And they probably let him and Jair duke it out in training camp. And listen, I'm not completely out on Jair Brown, but it's been a bad season for him.
It's one of those things where once he started to get targeted as the weak point, you just can't unsee it. It's really
hesitant. And I remember in the preseason, I saw him trigger downhill and look really aggressive, and I was really encouraged.
He has moments. He's talented. But
And he's smart, dude. He's whip smart. He's wicked smart.
But he doesn't translate that on the field. He doesn't. His run fits against Buffalo were so awful. It was like he was on a different game plan. And you just can't have that with the safeties. I'm willing to accept that kind of play from linebackers, but safeties, it's just too risky. I need you to be in the right position before being. And by the way, by having Gibson and Tart and all these guys over the years, the 49ers have made the exact same statement, which is that we will value where you will you be in the right spot over your ability to do something cool. I'm not sure they're wrong about that. And this is the first time that they've tried it the other way. And here's the evidence as to why they were right all along. Do we have any more Niners? Because otherwise we're going to do the other part of the show. It's pretty accurate.
I don't have a retort for that.
You have no retort. It's
funny because it's both incredibly critical and also, you know, these guys kind of suck, but I like them and I can respect that. I can absolutely respect them.
I don't know if any of that was pejorative. I think these are just blatant statements. Sometimes we sound like a bunch of meathead dumbasses, and sometimes we sound like we're splitting the atom over here. And the answer is we're just full of it like the rest of y'all.
That's right.
No notes. That's exactly
right. That's where we're different. That's where we're different. I'll take that. I think it's a very reasonable
listen,
critique.
We listen back to the shows. Can't say that he's wrong. Can't say that he's wrong. Also, we're not changing it.
Absolutely not.
What does Jordan Elliott do?
So not Jordan what he's supposed Elliott to do. Was called the 49ers' best run defender by Kyle Shanahan, which I think is more a reflection of their philosophy on the defensive line than it is him as a player, because he's not a good run defender. He's rated highly by PFF, but I saw him he would drive upfield, get moved out of gaps and sent into the ether time after time after time. I've seen him make stops. I've seen him, their whole philosophy is attack, right? And so if you get a field and you make a backfield stop, great. But when you're in the void and your linebackers are getting double teamed, you're getting a guard who's just demolishing Fred Warner. Maybe that scheme should come into question.
Well, yes, the scheme should come into question when you don't have the players to run the scheme that you want. And at the same time,
Jordan Elliott can't hold a double team. I think he'd be a better pass rusher than a run defender, but they seem to see it in the exact opposite way.
Do you think that because the meatball, God bless him, can actually handle a double team and is the only one on this defensive front that can handle double team, people are overrating him because they're grading on the curve?
Yes, I do think so. I do think I'm going to do after this game, I think I'm going to do a full deep dive into Evan Anderson. So I want to hold off on describing him either way. But I see times where he looks, as we saw watching tape of college and in with testing, very slow and barely an NFL player, and times where you go, oh, my God, he somehow fired off the ball and is like the strongest defensive tackle they have. So,
yeah. They had a problem there. Saw it coming from a million miles away. Only gotten worse. Let's talk Giants. Much like a team that's got some problems from a million miles away. Thoughts on Adamas to the Giants? It better work for the first 2 years because the final 5 years of that contract are going to be a goddamn disaster.
When you can sign a guy, they love, I mean, did the Giants love anything more than a guy who's a career, like, 250 hitter?
Oh, they, no, he'll be different for us.
People talk about the Dodgers contracts being a sign that they're like, oh, baseball's dead, all this deferred money. Every team, by the way, is allowed to do that.
Yes.
Owners just aren't doing it. Baseball's dead because guys are hitting 240 and 250. Like, somebody have the courage to get on base. That's all I'm saying.
Between 2022 and 2023, Willy Adamas played 288 games for the Milwaukee Brewers. He had 55 home runs and 170. So he averaged 28 home runs and 89 RBIs a year. Awesome numbers. He also struck out more than twice as often as he walked. He had a 304 on base percentage and a 228 on batting average. He played good, but in no way like laudable defense. Last year, knowing it was a contract year,
yeah,
he went out.
That's the Jose Reyes, folks.
It's 250, 251, 331, 462. Didn't even get you the 800 OPS season, but was 18% better than league average on OPS plus. Like, and you're paying him so much money. Yeah. Whatever. If it wins games, it wins games. But
Willie Amadeus.
Amadeus. Incredible. It is so laughable that the market for him was this hot and the Giants are like, yeah, we got to get up in that. We got to beat everyone to the market for Willy Adamas.
Yeah.
I got an idea. Make a player. Just make one. Make one. And don't tell me, oh, Elliot Ramos. That was an accident.
The most maddening part about the Giants and genuinely any team, and we'll conclude with Niners after this, but because I hear you half dead. Baseball has been,
this is another thing show.
This is the other portion of the show.
We gave you one solid hour of football on a Tuesday night.
We did. The thing about the Giants,
we go straight up into biker mode. It's pretentious douchebags, bros, and bikers.
We can't forget that their quote is they want to be mostly break even. And then he, he retracted that was their owner that they're not trying to just do that. They are trying to be mostly break even. They want guys with vaguely familiar names who make sure that they are around 500. Their win totals at 83.5. I think I'd hammer the under. I expect them to have 78 wins. The worst place you can be in sports, in my opinion, is in the middle. No clear direction either way. Also, how are you? Buster Posey was hired yesterday. How are they going to have an apparatus up to say, oh, this is what we're actually looking for in
a
player?
They brought back Bobby Evans,
who's been trying to get a job for decades. Since I know he was fired less than a decade ago, but it feels like.
Yeah. No, they're great. It's going great.
Yeah, it all relies on the hopes of Bryce Eldridge, who's, what, 19 years old?
No, that's fine. Jake, I used to do the 10 to midnight show on KMBR every night, and the Giants weren't good. And so we spent a lot of time talking about Marco Luciano. And let me just tell you, Bryce Eldridge is just Marco Luciano 2.0 until proven differently. It's just, it is so much fun. I'm incredible. Loving it. And here's the worst part, Jake. Let me just fast forward here. So I found out I can lucid dream, and there's some really interesting shit. That's not the point.
Aaron Rodgers just woke up from a deep slumber.
So apparently I was just listening to something and they're like, oh, this is lucid dreaming. I'm like, oh, I've been able to do that my whole life. And I get really bad deja vu a lot. And it's like these, I have dreams and then it's like, oh, this is
today.
Yeah, it's bad. And there is some studies that with lucid dreaming, you can like actually see stuff. Like it's bizarre. There's a bizarreness to it. Regardless, I'm going to let you into the future here. You can all come on my lucid dream. And the Giants are going to have a month. I'm going to say it's July, where they just go like 19-8. And everyone thinks it's on, baby. And oh boy, is August going to hit so goddamn hard. It's going to hit like a ton of bricks. They're going to win like 8 games, lose a bunch of series. Oh, it's going to be the best. But they're going to get you. They're going to make you take your eye off the ball. And I mean WNBA basketball. They're going to make you take your eye off the ball for like a couple of weeks in July. And you're going to think, hey, maybe the Giants got something. And they won't.
Just to finish the point on Giants before we loop back around. And it tells you all you need to know about Giants baseball for last however long. When I had to cover the Giants, I would be listening on the radio and I'd be, you know, watching the game. And I would fall asleep.
Yep.
For a few innings at a time.
Yeah. In and the I would press not box, miss anything. It was really unprofessional. Was... Did I ever tell the story about how I fell asleep in the press box at Soldier Field?
You did?
Oh, out. Dead. Couldn't have been more asleep. So I was working for Fox and I had been covering the World Series in Chicago in 2016. And there was a Monday Night Football game. It was Bears and Vikings. Now, one of my responsibilities at Fox was I would write, like, you know, snarky columns Saturday, Sunday, but then I'd write off the standalone games on Monday and Thursday. And so I'm having to watch Monday Night Football anyway. I'm in Chicago, just staying at my parents' place. And I'm like, I might as well just fucking go. Like, I might as well go. I'm exhausted, right? I've been covering the baseball playoffs like every day for the last month. I'm in the middle of football season. NBA is ramping up. That's another one of my beats. I'm going back and forth to San Francisco and LA all the time. I'm on a plane. I'm tired. I'm fucking tired. I'm exhausted. The Bears make it a total pain. They're like, you're going to have to pay $80 to park. And I'm like, Fox is going to have a conniption on that. So now I'm trying to figure out some back doorway to make it happen. Suffice it to say, I get into the press box and I'm like, I don't even know. Like, this is not even an interesting game. Like, I don't even want to write about this. Like, why am I here?
Playing? It's the Bears playing who?
The Bears and the Vikings. This would have been okay. In 2016.
Tough.
It is cold. It's brisk outside. I think it started to rain at one point. It's a night game. The Bears press box has very bad lighting. Like, agreed. Like, this.
That stadium's cursed.
It's the space toilet, it's horrific. It's really bad lighting. I'm wearing a coat. I got my laptop. They're pumping in heat. I mean, it is 85 degrees in that press box. There's not enough caffeine in the world to keep. And I just laid my head down and fell asleep. I slept for 3 full quarters. No one woke me up. No one said anything. I woke up. I fell asleep like early first quarter. I wake up, it's the fourth quarter.
What did you do with yourself?
I quickly tried to assemble something.
Oh.
I quickly tried to figure out what happened via Twitter, I think is what happened. Because it was 2016.
That's awesome.
And I'm not going to lie, Jake. Outstanding sleep. Outstanding sleep.
There's no better sleep, honestly. Than the pure, like, you're in school after you just had lunch and the either AC is pumping or the heat's pumping and it's just got you right and you're listening to like an old woman talk, and this for my case it would be John Miller's caramel voice just lulling you to sleep. That feeling where you just eat it and you let it go, it's incredible.
Could not have been more asleep. And it's honestly my fear now, in perpetuity, that it will happen again. Some Warriors games, they get the lights down low. Ooh. It's kind of boring. Warriors games get loud enough that it's not necessarily a problem, but man, oh, it's good. Yeah, okay, it was October, it was Halloween, 2016, Bears-Vikings. The Bears were 1-6 going into the game.
Incredible.
They won, though. They won.
The Bears, baby.
Nothing but the Bears.
Incredible.
They always deliver. Oh, man.
All right.
That's enough.
I guess we should close out with some predictions, right?
Do we want to even, like, can we do a quick 5-minute preview?
Sure. Let's do a quick 5-minute preview starting now.
Now. Okay. Good thing we have a timer. Okay. We're at 109. Matt Stafford is more volatile than he's letting on. I think that there is a groundswell of people right now being like, man, Matt Stafford's sick. He's awesome. And he is. He's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. He clearly has that level of talent. His issue is that it is not a consistent level of output, and he is very susceptible to circumstances around him. He was facing a Bills team that's coming off a high, traveling across country, doesn't have a particularly great pass rush. It's a good pass rush, but not a particularly great one. And just was kind of showed up ready to get kicked around a little bit because they're high on their own supply. And he was ripping it. He was fantastic. He also didn't get sacked. Matt Stafford has one scramble all year. Now, the 49ers are probably not the team that's going to force Matt Stafford to fear for his life. But if you can, this entire ball game changes. This is some like vintage 2013 shit where, like, if you just pressure the quarterback, the game is going to flip on its head. Like Peyton Manning or Tom Brady or Philip Rivers are back there because that's his era. It really is. So they don't have a good offensive line, in my opinion. They're still trying to figure it out with the run game. They're mixing in more Blake Corum these days. They got some sick wide receivers. There's no question about that. They go deep. They go deep, but they don't have a good tight end. It is, they very, very well could put 30 points on the board. But Stafford will throw you one. And if you put pressure on him, he might throw you two. And he will take and he will end plays on his own instead of throwing another interception if you can get pressure on him. So that's the entire key to the game for me on that side. And with the Niners side, Brock just needs to be in control. The Rams are going to be chaotic, but not in any sort of a controlled manner. They're just mixing it up for the sake of mixing it up. And you can burn them big, as certainly Josh Allen did again and again and again, because they don't know where they're supposed to be. They're just running around like something's on fire. And Brock Purdy, Juwan Jennings, we've seen them obviously early in the season when they were less chaotic, but you saw them have a great game in Los Angeles. That has to be the play there. Interested to see what happens in the backfield, but this feels very Thursday night coded. This feels like the kind of game that you want on a Thursday night, where it's barely football, but it's highly entertaining. Like that's exactly what I think we're going to get here.
What's well, I guess I'll go first with my side and then we'll do a prediction. I don't disagree with any of that. I do think watching the tape, the amount of Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp catches that are just tight windows where there's not even that much separation and Stafford's just slaying it inch perfect is sort of, you know, resembles exactly what their offense is. Kyren doesn't look like he's got quite the same juice. Corum's can move. I don't know if it's fresh legs, but he's a good running back. A little tricky. Natural I'm a little higher on their offensive line than you. I think they're starting to put it together. I mean, they invested big and it hasn't worked out, but I saw some double team blocks and some stuff in the run game that in the red zone was pretty impressive. As far as the 49ers are concerned, it really does come down to that. I think it comes down to them. Obviously, Stafford, you can get some pressure on him. Got to make it a lot easier. The Rams are going to get theirs at a certain point. I think they're going to score at minimum two touchdowns, probably three. I just think the way they operate, it's chaotic. They can move the ball down the field in a hurry. I would say three touchdowns for the Rams. You're the 49ers. I think you're going to need to score four touchdowns. If you score four touchdowns, I think you win this game.
That's a big ask, man.
I know. I don't even know if I believe it. We're just trying that on for size.
How many touchdowns did they score on Sunday?
Four. I think Jennings had two. Guerrero had one. Taylor have one.
Right. Purdy would have had one, but that turned into.
I don't know if they need four.
No, touchdowns. They scored five.
I'm thinking out loud here.
Field goal. Yeah.
I think it's going to come down to if Brock does have just basic answers and they execute in the red zone, because I think the Rams are going to get theirs. And I do think, honestly, gut feeling, the 49ers are the better team in this game. I know that's they've proven nothing, okay. But I don't know. I don't know if the Rams can't man them up. And they can't make Brock uncomfortable. I think the 49ers will win this game. I think if they do make Brock uncomfortable, either way, I think this thing is going to come down to the wire and be close because it's Thursday night football, and both these teams are not really fully formed teams and are just agents of chaos in different ways. This is probably my worst prediction of the year. I would say both Bosa and Trent are not playing. I'd be stunned.
They didn't practice today. They're not playing.
My gut feeling, even though I hate it, is that the 49ers win in like a bad close game.
It sounds to me like you think it's going to be a shootout. The nature of the Rams is that they can never play the same game twice.
No, it's, you know, I know I said that. It's like, I feel like it's going to be a shootout, but there's going to be some turnovers, so the scoring doesn't get that high. Like, I think the ball gets moved a lot, but drives end up stalling.
Big yards, bad execution in the red zone.
Yeah, let me say 27-25 Niners. Don't worry about how it gets to 25.
Hold on, let me go to sleep and I can see the future.
This is probably the worst prediction I've given all year, but 20, I just
22-18 Rams.
Nice.
Don't ask how it gets to 18. I think it will be entertaining, and you know what? That's all we're asking for these days.
Yeah.
I've seen them rip it. And also I'm actually really excited on a football level to see a bunch of cover six and how Kyle attacks it.
I'm with you.
That's something that has not been fully explored. I don't even know those words.
Frederick's. Listen, you got some words. You got some words, brother. Smart I'm man. Out of words. I'm out of words because this team has taken them from me. I just think this is going to be a fun game. It'll be fun.
Hopefully
and stupid.
It's fun.
I hope so.
Yeah, hopefully it can be fun. And I think it's this is a big Brock game, right? Okay, so Brock, fantastic, marvelous, near perfect against a team that was Washington Generalsing it real hard. That's not going to be the case on Thursday. I need to see Brock elevate his game in the games of those around him, especially probably with the questionable running game behind him. And let's see what Kyle and Brock have in store. That's what it's all about, huh?
Get some big Debo Samuel yards. Big Debo. I'm over this. I'm over this. Maybe get Ricky Pearsall involved. Who knows? We'll see.
Shut
Anything's possible. Anything's possible.
All right. We'll talk to you all later. Bye.